You know what, Clarissa? Tonight is the night that we're going to get under the covers and we're going to freak ourselves out.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
All right, Ted, it's episode 45 this week. How about we welcome everybody?
Yeah. Hey, everybody. I see, Jimmy, you have your Millennium Falcon t-shirt.
Yeah, I do. Oh, yeah, you have R2-D2.
I have R2-D2 on today. We coordinated. Good job.
Yeah, I got the memo. Yeah. So how have you been this week?
Pretty good. I had a awesome weekend. You know, we had we got delayed a little bit because of the 18-inning Dodger game.
Yeah.
Did you stay up for that?
I fell asleep. There was no, I mean, that's like back-to-back games.
Yeah.
You know, and I woke up, I was like, you know, I'm going, oh, they won, I'm going to bed. I watched the highlights the next morning.
I was trying to stay up. I was really jazzed about it. I was super excited. I was tweeting all over the place. Me and Joe Golev were going back and forth about how crazy it is, you know. I was talking to him and he was just tweeting out, but it felt very personal.
Longest game in history.
But I fell asleep at the top of the 18th, so that was the worst time to fall asleep.
I think I went down about the 14th or something. I don't know.
Well.
But yeah, it was anyway. A lot of fun, though. I mean, you know, we didn't finish out, you know, we're recording this on Sunday now, and I don't even know. I kind of just, Boston was up 5-1, so I cut it out. But oh no, they won. Yeah, it's over. Okay.
It's over.
There you go. Hey, spoiler alert, Boston wins the World Series.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it was better than last year. Last year I remember going around trick-or-treating and having people watching the Astros versus the Dodgers.
Yeah, they lost then too. So. Yeah.
How was your week?
Yeah, week was good. It was 3 weeks later. I'm finally over this stupid cold I had. I've been, you know, I'm sure everyone's tired of hearing about it, but oh man, I feel great. Yeah, other than that, I mean, you know, a lot of baseball, you know, we've been watching all week. We did start Designated Survivor on Netflix.
Oh, neat. Is it good?
Yeah, I think it's what, an ABC show or something, but it hit. Well, my mom's been telling me about it for like a couple of seasons now. So then I saw it pop up on Netflix and I said to Clarissa, I said, hey, why don't we watch it, you know? And we're like 4 episodes in, and best way to describe it is 24 light.
I'm just trying to imagine what SOTs of Jack Bauer you're going to pull in.
Yeah. You know, Kiefer Sutherland is the designated survivor, who's now the president, who's trying to figure out who blew up the Capitol building. And I mean, it's kind of 24-ish, you know, and they don't leave you with crazy cliffhangers, at least not yet. So that I think that's a positive.
Previously on 24.
I don't know. It's okay so far. I mean, I don't have a problem with it. It's, but we'll see. We'll see where it goes.
Would you say that not governing is not an option?
Well, it's so funny though, like, you know, the one comment I think I'd make on it is, you know, like, he'll sit there and he's like this clueless president who doesn't know what he's doing, you know, how he got there, and, you know, he doesn't know what to say and all this stuff. And then he's sitting down with the Iranian ambassador and he just like lays it out like this perfect, like, this is the way it is, this is what we're going to do. And 24 hours. You got 24 hours or whatever it was, you know, and it's just like, and then he goes back to being this dumbfounded, like, how did I get here? I don't know what I'm doing. You know, it's just like, come on, man. Like,
yeah,
you know, you're into it, you know, but
pick a lane.
Yeah. Yeah. How about you? You watching anything this week?
I started to rewatch Psych, the USA TV show, watching from the beginning. We'll see. I got a couple episodes in over the weekend.
Psych.
But I did. So we had a couple events this weekend. Part of the reason we're doing it on a Sunday instead of Saturday was my daughter went to LACMA Teen Night. So I don't know if you know the Los Angeles County Museum of Art has Teen Night every year.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
And our friends told us about it. Yeah, I guess they do it every year. Usually high schoolers, but now they've switched to doing it with middle schoolers, which I think is just a better plan altogether because, you know, it's more respectful in the middle school space.
And it's a museum of art and they bring in teens. What's like the theme or like what's the purpose or what does it do? Is it a fundraiser or how?
No, it's free. It's completely free. They get to go in there from, what, 7:30 to 10, and they basically just hang out with a whole bunch of other middle schoolers from all over LA. As long as you've registered, you can get in.
Okay.
And it's just a community service, like giving back kind of thing.
Oh, that's very cool. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like a festival, but it's inside. Some of the exhibits are open. They have some picture photo booths and all kinds of other fun things to do. So it was a cool evening, and our friend's dad and myself were able to hang out, did, you know, a coffee shop and a bar and watch the end of that game too. And luckily it didn't go 18 innings, but it was fun. It was a fun evening. So that was our Saturday night, and we already talked about Friday night, but on a serious note, and maybe something that I might write about, I started to write about it over the weekend, was the Filmstruck streaming service was shut down or announced that it's going to be shutting down the end of November. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. So it's really kind of amazing. And I think people are likening it to Blockbuster and Toys R Us and things like that. But I really think it's a little bit different than that because it's a streaming service and because it's Turner Classic Movies and, you know, it's basically part of the Turner network. But it's something different. It's not based on an algorithm. And I think that was the cool thing. It was really curated. It was manicured. It was teaching viewers how to watch things and what to look for in film. It was kind of like a film school for people that didn't have film school or people that wanted a little extra film school. So I think it's interesting to take something that doesn't care who you are and what you like, but wants to show you what's good and wants to show you about the craft that is cinematography and filmmaking, and then to kind of have it not succeed in this new space where people feel like they need to be catered to. So I think it's from the germ of things that I've written about before on our articles page on the website. So it's very similar to catering, you know, having the customers catered to, but a service doesn't mean that you're providing the customers with everything that they want. Sometimes you have to figure out what people need, and sometimes people's needs aren't at 100% match with what they want. So that's kind of what I'm writing about.
I mean, in this like climate, like you said, people being catered to and everything, I mean, do you think a service like that would be a little bit too highbrow? Like,
yeah, I guess that's why it isn't continuing as it is. But I definitely think there's still a space for it. There's still a need for it, and there's still a way for it to work. So I think that we'll be able to figure it out. Not us, but us in general. You know, maybe Film Twitter can figure it out.
Yeah, like it's a little bit of a film niche.
Yeah.
And maybe it's not enough of a niche to sustain itself independently, like, you know, financially independently.
Exactly.
But maybe as, I don't know, like what you'd call it, like a subsidiary of a Netflix type thing or something, you know?
Right. Or, you know, we talked about LACMA, we talked about arts, you know, it needs patrons. And I think, you know, the way Jeff Bezos was a patron to the Washington Post while it was trying to get its sea legs back, you know, I think there are patrons out there of cinema that can foot the bill and kind of keep it going. And I think it could go into the space of like the public library. You know, the public library has a very rudimentary streaming media site. You know, you could bump it up. You could, you know, get the licenses. You could grant the licenses out. I think licensing fees are difficult when you're licensing all these old movies.
Yeah.
It's a harder nut to crack as far as, you know, how much you're going to pay for movies that you're trying to get people to watch, but you're not just feeding their desires, you know?
And you have like the PBS on Roku and type thing. And, you know, you have those streaming networks and channels that maybe are a little bit more publicly funded or supported. And I don't know, we'll see where it lands, you know? But yeah, I agree with you. I think it's one of those types of things where there's an art to certain, whether it's, you know, movies or music or, you know, visual and performing arts of any kind, really. And then you have like the junk that just entertains you.
Right.
Which, that's fine too. We cover that too, you know, and we talk about a lot of that stuff. But I mean, I think, you know, when we get into some of the movies and trailers that we review and you see how they're just, they're art pieces or they come from small art houses and things. And then we do the huge blockbuster, you know, like, I don't know, what would you call it? Like, you know, Marvels and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Blockbuster is the right word.
Yeah. And they appeal to like an enormous audience, right? They're slated to make $100 million. These little movies aren't.
And they have to, and they're kind of tied to the idea of having to clear a lot of money, you know, like they have to,
because they cost a lot of money.
They cost a lot of money and they have to make a lot of money. So they have to like have a broad, broad appeal, all the four quadrants like we talked about in the early days.
Yeah. And I think if that's all movie houses are going to, you know, like production companies and the Sonys and Paramounts and stuff are going to stick with, and the smaller, more art films, I mean, I think people are always going to make that stuff, but the way it gets brought to people, if it's not brought to you in a way that's easy to digest, they're going to get lost in the mix and people just aren't going to find it because they're not going to go looking.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of sad in a way because like awesome and deep diving art and so on of whatever the genre film and, you know, whatever it is, those things are going to like fade away, not because they're not good or anything, but just because the masses, you know, I mean, it's like, what was the one movie? Idiocracy, right?
Right.
You know, we don't want that to happen, you know? But yeah, I'm looking forward to reading that.
Cool.
All right, Ted, how about this? So we have a review to read, but before we do, can I get into my beer?
Let's get into your beer.
And is it safe to say you're in, what, week 5 of your 6-week program?
I'm very close. I'm finishing off a protein shake right now.
Oh, look at this guy.
A post-dinner protein shake, so that's in...
Post-dinner?
Yeah, we had dinner like at 4 o'clock, so... We had an
early night too. We had like a kid's like Halloween party at the neighbors. But all right, so a number of people may have heard of this, and probably a bunch of people have. But it was a new discovery for me. I've heard the name, I've never drank it, but Moose Drool. You ever have a Moose Drool?
Oh, I've heard of it. I've never had it.
Yeah, Big Sky Brewing Company in Missoula, Montana, and it's a brown ale. 5.2% alcohol. So another light one, you know, it's not super heavy, but let me get it open here. So let's see it. Yeah.
I'm not a fan of brown ales. Do you like brown ales?
I can do a brown ale. I can't, you know, brown ales, that kind of thing. It's like a stout, you know, like, all right, I'll let that head go down a little bit. Brown ales are kind of like a stout.
What's that really famous nut brown ale? It's like Smith's or Smithies.
Newcastle?
Newcastle. Yeah, I wasn't ever a Newcastle fan.
Smithy's Newcastle?
There's a different Smithy thing.
Yeah, no, I mean, brown ales are like the, you know, like I said, stouts or porters and stuff, you know, where it's like, yeah, to have one, maybe two, but after that, it's like you can't just pound them, you know?
No.
So, all right, let me take a sip. Well, you know what? I'm letting it settle out a little bit. Let me read a review. So this is from Idle Hands 666.
Could it possibly be? Was it? Oh, I don't know. Satan.
5 stars. All right. Nothing less than 5 stars. Do like trailers. These guys break down trailers as if they were movies. Knowledgeable, well-informed, funny. These guys have it all. If you're looking to be interested in a movie by just the trailer, this is the place to go.
Awesome.
So yeah, we appreciate it there, Idle Hand 666. Or shall I say Satan? All right. All right, tell me to take a quick sip here.
Let's go.
Oh yeah, super smooth. I think it's like right down the middle. It's like one of Kershaw's fastballs right down the middle that gets hit for a home run.
Oh, painful, painful.
Yeah, this is, definitely a home run. I think of a brown ale. It's really smooth and everything, creamy, not too heavy, a little bit light bodied. But in the world of brown ales, yeah, this one's good, man. I would definitely buy this again. So not too heavy, not too light. I think it's right where it needs to be for what I feel like having right now. It's like a nightcap, like I've said.
Cool. All right.
All right, man. What do you say?
So we got a couple trailers.
Yeah, well, we have three trailers.
We have a few trailers.
Yeah. All right. I Am the Night.
I Am the Night. So this is an older one. So it's been out for a little bit, but I was very intrigued by a promo that I saw.
Okay.
I saw a promo of it recently that was just released. But after I started digging around, I saw that the trailer had come out earlier. And it's interesting to me for many reasons. So it had a multifaceted interest for me as far as the marketing of it all. First of all, it's Patty Jenkins. So again, a top-notch female director is attacking a limited series television show, you know, for TNT. And then TNT on their side, they got Patty Jenkins, the director of Wonder Woman, and Chris Pine, one of the, you know, top actors in the superhero genre and across different, you know, Star Trek and all that. They got him in this limited television series for TNT. So it's not even for a streaming service. It's for terrestrial television. It's for linear television, albeit part of this package that they're selling as the TNT Suspense Collection. So TNT has branded themselves, and they kind of have a bunch of sub-brands, which they have, you know, TNT is known for basketball. So they have TNT NBA, which is basically a sub-brand of TNT. And now they're packaging The Alienist with this TNT Suspense Collection and packaging it with I Am the Night, which is a true life story of a murder. What is it, 50s, I think?
It looks like it's somewhere. If I had to guess, I'd say like 1962 or something like that.
Okay, you're pretty good on the years, so I'll go with
you. Yeah, just by the cars, because like you don't see fins 60s. And stuff, you know? Okay. So maybe it's like 62, 63, you know? That'd be my guess.
So, yeah, so I just thought it's very interesting that a family of television channels is going the route of putting this together and building a brand that is kind of separate from TNT, ready for any streaming service to take on or to take up. And it's done top dollar. They spent a lot of money on this, and you can tell through the whole production value, through the names that they got for it in front of and behind the camera. And, you know, it looks like they're putting their money where their mouth is. And you just hope that all the streaming services that are coming out to play with Netflix come out with their guns blazing like this. And it feels like it's the only way to go.
Yeah. And the thing I find enjoyable about watching trailers and, you know, the modern time as is now, is that you send the trailers and everything, and you kind of build the show that we're going to do. And I watch the trailers.
Uh-huh.
And then I go out and do research afterwards, you know, because I want to watch it. Like, I don't want to know anything. Like, I don't want to come in pre-knowledge or any of that stuff.
Right.
So I think what's cool about a lot of the weeks that we do, including this week, is that the trailers are cut in such a way that you don't know whether or not they're a series or whether or not they're a movie or, you know, whatever it might be. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so like I Am the Night, I'm watching it, and then I did some research and I saw that, you know, on IMDb or something, various characters were in five episodes. And I'm like, wait, is this a series? And then I start questioning, and then I do a little bit of deeper reading, and I'm like, oh, okay, I see where this is going. And then, you know, we're going to get to Bird Box later, which is on Netflix, but not to jump ahead too fast, but
I like the comparison. Yeah.
It's one of the things where I'm watching and I'm like, oh, so Netflix has another series out. You know, and then it ends with in local theater, or not local theaters, but what do they say in selected theaters or whatever it is?
Selected theaters and streaming.
Exactly, yeah. And I'm like, oh, this one must be a movie. Like, I'm wrong on both ends, you know? And you almost can't really tell. Like, I thought Bird Box was going to be like a new Walking Dead kind of a thing, you know, and back and forth. But yeah, so overall, I would say that the way trailers are being cut for series is so seamless that you don't know where episodes begin and end and where you are in the story. And they're really just like extended, like, I don't even want to say mini series. I mean, but they're like extended, they're like large format movies or something.
Yeah, I really think so. What the industry is now calling the limited series is the new miniseries. And I still hear some people in the industry calling them miniseries, but I agree with you that as the consumer, miniseries has like a specific connotation to it that it doesn't really like lend itself to any highbrow stakes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, when I hear miniseries, I think Patrick Swayze and the North and the South, you know, and from the '80s.
I think the only miniseries that got any of its true creds is oh man, what's the yard? Not Yardbirds. What's it called?
Yardbirds? I don't know.
I have to look this up. It's some bird something. Anyway.
Yeah, but overall though, I have a couple of weird criticisms about this.
Oh, Thornbirds.
One is, oh, the Thornbirds. Yeah. Yeah, that was another one my mom watched back in the day when I was a kid, you know, and it was always like just pornographic enough for like ABC, you know. But no, one of my questions though that I have is, or maybe not questions, but criticisms, is that you have this young girl who discovers that she's adopted.
Mm-hmm.
And if you pause, which I paused, the birth certificate scene, it looks like she has a white parent and a black parent. You can't tell which is which.
Right.
And then she's there saying like, oh my God, I'm adopted, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And for what it is, I don't know what she is in real life. Maybe she is, you know, half black, half white or something, but she looks white for what it is. And it's like, wait, this black woman adopts you and you don't know you're adopted?
You mean I'm going to stay this color?
Like, it just struck me as bizarre because she's so fair-skinned. And I don't know, it just didn't seem to, like, it called into question, like, the surprise that a teenager would have, I think, you know?
Right. Does it remind you of Naven?
Naven? What am I missing?
Naven from The Jerk?
Oh, yeah. It seems like it's the true story, I guess, based on some events of like George Hodel, a gynecologist in L.A. or something from that point. But it almost looks like slightly horror, like it's, I don't know, like occultish or something.
It has like this murder mystery feel to it.
But the occult is involved, it seems.
Oh, yeah, it has. Yeah, I guess it has some of that horror elements, but it feels like it's more of like Eyes Wide Shut occult, not full.
Yeah.
Not your full.
Not satanic occult.
Right.
Well, that must go back with Idle Hands 666. I don't know.
Satan!
He's got us on the ropes.
He does, man. He does. But yeah, I mean, I'll tell you though, it looks suspenseful. And I love I don't know what the instruments that they're doing in the sound score, in the music score, but it fits brilliantly.
No, it's a wonderful, wonderfully scored, beautifully put together piece of a trailer here. So
yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's
very, very excited about it. I like the star caliber. I like, you know, what TNT is trying to do. I think it's a high must watch, you know.
What, you know, we talked about this before. What you see is writers directing and so on in the television space is just incredible when we consider, like, you know, this was the caliber, and maybe not even the caliber from, you know, years past in the cinema space, you know, on the big screen, but television, it's almost like the doors are, you know, the doors are wide open, the floodgates are going.
Yeah.
And like anything goes, but like when I say anything goes, I mean that in like a good way though. Like not just people are putting out junk.
Right. It's no limits. Yeah.
I mean, it's like, yeah, there's no limits on like, you can't put that on TV or you can't write about that, or we don't have the budget for this and we can do whatever we're like. There, like the first season of The Walking Dead, for example, the last episode when the CDC blows up, the biggest, I think it was Robert Kirkman was interviewed and he said the biggest regret he had was not going out and getting more money for the final scene. And they put together like this ridiculously like a silly explosion that really like brought down the quality of the show they put together to that point.
Ah,
you know? So then when you look at shows like this, where they do put in that money and stuff. And I mean, The Walking Dead got money afterwards, of course, but yeah, I mean, it's just, it's like no holds barred, man. And everything's on the table.
Yeah. And I like what you were saying as far as not being able to tell whether something's a series.
I think that's what a quality is.
Or a movie. And yeah, it's totally like the quality of what is coming out is amazing. And, you know, I watch a lot of trailers that we don't talk about and we don't cover. And there's a lot of, you know, feature films that are still being made and they're lower budget and they're middle of the road and they aren't spending any money on the trailers and it kind of shows and you can't tell whether the movie's good or not, but you just know that they don't have a marketing budget. And I just think that's, there's a slight shame to that, but I'm just like, you know, we'll cover the best trailers for the week, whether they're regardless of what venue they're coming out in, you know. I think that's what we've always fallen into.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I mean, and maybe once in a while we should throw in something that has a small budget, a marketing budget, to have a juxtaposition and a compare and contrast to say, like, these people have a good marketing budget and look what we get. These people right. have like no marketing budget and look what we get.
Right.
The movie or the TV show is really irrelevant because we right. don't know what we're getting. It might be great, but their mm-hmm. marketing budget could dictate what they do at the box office or what they do on television and viewership.
Yeah. I think that's why I did Thunder Road, because I was so taken aback by, you know, knowing that they had a very limited marketing budget and yet were able to pull off a lot of marketing wins.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, man. So, yeah, you, real quick, though, I think you said you were going to watch this one.
I'm going to watch this one.
Yeah, and is it strictly 6 episodes, or is that just what they have so far, or do you know about that?
I don't know. It looked like that was it. It looks like that's it for the first run of it, or the... It looked like it was a little open-ended, so I don't know.
Right.
We'll see if they solve it, and then whether these characters have any legs, but... You know, 6 hours is like a couple, it's like a trilogy of a movie, you know, if you put it together right. You know, I think you could write a story and have it be fulfilling and play out in 6 episodes and be be a fully satiated from 6 episodes.
Yeah, I think we might watch this one. I mean, there's a bunch of stuff, you know, in the can waiting to be watched, but I mean, this will just have to get put in line, and I think it's one that should be put in line. It looks really good.
Yeah. Oh, I finally got Anne to start watching The Good Place.
The Good Place.
So if you guys start watching The Good Place, you could catch up to us. And
okay, yeah, we'll fit it in between Designated Survivor.
Designated Survivor. That's right.
Yeah. See how that goes. 24. 24 reboot. All right. The Kid Who Would Be King.
So The Kid Who Would Be King. Is another one that I picked a little bit for the marketing angles and the way that they put the trailer out there. It's a 20th Century Fox film, but it's only circulated or housed on their family platforms or the UK platform. So it's both on the UK YouTube and on the family YouTube channel, but it's not on the main channel. It's not housed on the main channel, but it's still pushed to from the main channel on the splash page. but the video itself is not housed there. It actually shoots you out into the other channels. So I thought that's an interesting thing to look at, because as Disney gets into the streaming game, I think that's one of the biggest issues that Disney has. And as I say every week, no insider information here, but I think the biggest challenge Disney has, and I think I've said it before, is bringing in the Fox talent and the Fox titles, and allowing the Fox titles that are built for grownups and non-family entertainment, and allowing it the space to breathe and giving it its own separate marketing campaign. I think there's definitely a tinge on the Star Wars stuff and a tinge on the Marvel stuff that, because it's appealing to such a wide audience, like we've talked about early on, it kind of has not offended, but maybe slightly rubbed the wrong way some of the hardcore fans of the core stuff, you know? So I think this is interesting. This is definitely a kid's trailer for a kid's title, but it looks like they spent tons of money on this too. What do you think?
Yeah, so let's back up a second. You're saying this is a YouTube thing? Wait, what?
No, okay, sorry. So all the 20th Century Fox YouTube channels, they have different channels for their for the different properties.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
And their main domestic 20th Century Fox YouTube channel doesn't house this trailer.
Okay, I follow you now. Yeah, I mean, I would agree. It's a kid's movie. I think it's more of like a middle school, like eighth grader, like 15-year-old kind of movie. I don't think I would show my kids. They're a little bit too young.
Right.
You know, with the, I don't know, demonic looking, I don't know, underworld knights who come to fight the kids or whatever it is. And yeah, and I think kids who have the language of things like Mario Kart and they play these games and stuff, I think it's right in their wheelhouse, you know, for like someone who's like 14, 15 years old. One of the things, and you know, we may get some flack for this, but like Harry Potter, for example.
Yes.
I'm not a huge Harry Potter fan. You know, I read a number of the books. I didn't read all the books, but I did read most of the books, saw the movies, because I think where Harry Potter falls apart for me personally is the modern day stuff.
Mm.
Like, I love when they're in the castle, and I love the school and the magic, and whenever they do anything that resembles anything of being medieval, you know? But when they have flying cars and they're looking at, you know, the modern day London and stuff, I just, for some reason, I just don't like that part of Harry Potter.
Huh.
And I have a feeling this movie for me would fall into that realm. Like, I get what it's going after, but I would rather see it like, you know, 500 years ago or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess so. I tend to like, did you like About a Boy?
I never saw About a Boy.
Oh man, you got to see About a Boy.
Okay, I'm going to put that on the list.
Put it on the list. Oh, you and Clarissa Clarissa will be bawling by the end of it.
Oh sure. Man, get her a box of tissue.
It's great. It's a great movie. But it has that a UK, it has a growing up in the United Kingdom kind of vibe to it. It feels a lot like this movie feels, and I feel like this movie has a wider appeal. I like that you brought up Harry Potter. I think it has the possibility to spawn a bit of a franchise. I think it feels like it, you know, and I'm a little concerned, you know, it's like, it feels like a franchise movie. It'd be a great franchise, but then does Disney get blamed for taking a movie that should have been a one-off or was intentionally made as a one-off and then turning it into a franchise because it does well at the box office? I think anybody would have done it. But it's very weird to have a feeling of defensiveness as this company gets folded into Disney. You know, it's like it's a strange feeling. Like, I think this is going to do really well, and I hope that it's a franchise.
Yeah.
But is that just because I have a franchise hat on? Do I feel like I want things to be franchise and be successful, you know?
Well, and the other side of this, too, is, well, okay, talking about a franchise, I guess, does it need to be a...
Because you don't like franchises, I think you've said.
You know, here's the thing. I don't mind franchises. So if you look at, for example, Lord of the Rings, you know, you have the books that were written and the story to be told, and you're just going to run through making the movies from the beginning to the end of the story. Perfect. You know, like it serves its purpose and its need. Harry Potter, again, it's books, or Game of Thrones, they're books, and you're running through, even though they might not like Game of Thrones doesn't follow exact, but
right.
But you follow through the stories that have been written. You know, where I lose it with the franchises is when the stories have been told and now they're making it up for making it up's sake, just to sell box office tickets to keep it going to fanboys or fangirls who just want to go to the movies to see more Marvel or something. And it's just like, I don't know. It's just that's where I lose it in the franchise space.
So, like, Too Fast, Too Furious was too much?
Yeah, I mean, okay, I saw I think it was, like, the first two, maybe. I think I saw two of them.
Oh, Tokyo Drift's really good. So watch the first three, and then I think there is some of the one-upsmanship where it's like, oh, how are we going to make this one different? How are we going to make it more than the last five?
And that's exactly right. You know, like, we've told the story, but people keep coming, so let's just keep selling tickets, you know? It's like, man, it's like when a TV show gets to the point where... You know, seriously, though, when a TV show, like, why on earth is The Walking Dead still on, you know? Like,
well, and I'm so glad I was exactly thinking the exact same thing. We had talked about limited series versus movies and not being able to distinguish the two. A poorly run franchise or an overextended franchise is just like a TV series that has run too long, or a TV series that's trying to write into 22 episodes when it should only be 10 or 6. You know, so I agree.
Like you said a couple weeks back. So it's 22 episodes, but they go into these character building for no other reason than they have time to fill.
Right.
And that's what I loved about The Wire. You know, they did 5 seasons on 5 aspects of government, or 5 aspects on Baltimore and so on. You know, they told the story they had to tell and they got out.
Right.
It was over. You know, they didn't need to just keep it go. They had an audience. If they put out 6, 7, 8 seasons, the audience was there, you know? Mm-hmm. But they just said, we said what we had to say, we're done.
Yeah, and that lies at the strength of your showrunner and the clout that your showrunner brings, you know, as when you go to pitch a well thought out series, you bring what's called your series Bible. And basically you have written out your story arcs for seasons in a Bible, in a book, you know, in a lengthy book of treatments of various aspects of character development, story development, where we start, where we end. And the more developed you can make this Bible, that's why they call it the show Bible, is that then as you have to write into places and you have other writers come in, they can see if it fits in the overall show Bible, you know, canon.
Yeah.
And I think even shows that I loved, like X-Files, you know, it kind of, the wheels fell off. Mulder and Scully are gone. And why are they still doing this thing? You know?
Yeah. Just, you know, write out the end and move on. And the production company just needs to, I don't know. Like, I guess, you know, when people are paying you, you just keep going. I mean, I don't know. Like, what would I do? You know, would I just be like, no, screw it. I don't want all that money. I'd do it too, I guess. But one thing I have to say about this, though. So he draws the sword from the stone.
Uh-huh.
And then there's like the old guy who's cloaked as the kid or whatever.
Merlin, right?
Yeah, exactly. So he's the one who, like, and he turns into the bird and he does all this stuff, right? And it's all predicated on the solar eclipse.
Yes.
Right? Coming in 2 days or whatever it was, or 4 days, you know? But what would have happened had he drawn the stone, drawn the sword from the stone, like, the day after the solar eclipse? Would they have then had to have waited, like, you know, however many more years?
I don't know. Yeah, maybe.
And there's all almost every year, every other year, whatever, there's a solar eclipse somewhere on the planet, right? Would they have had to have traveled to that place on Earth to then fight the demons over there?
Maybe. And maybe it has to do with the solar eclipse in the location where the sword is in the stone, you know? So the UK is very, very small in comparison, but I think there's multiple, you know, yeah, like you said, there's multiple solar eclipses all over the United States years to years. So,
well, and then it's like, you know, because Greenwich Mean Time is like, you know, in the UK. So I guess that's why the sword is there, and that's why the eclipse is there, and that's why they attack there, right?
Okay.
I don't know. But no, I mean, like, and that's one of the weaknesses, I think, of the story, too, is like, well, okay, yeah, the solar eclipse. Well, what if it was like the next day, you know, that he drew this? And then the whole story falls apart.
Of course. Well, you know, every story needs some contrivances. It needs a little bit of setup. And
yeah, you know, it's got to move it forward.
I think you should figure out a way to leave some of the exposition out of the trailer and maybe put in a little bit more of the mystery. You know, if you look back at I Am the Night, completely different stories, but I think it asks more questions than it answers. And I think that's okay. And I think the trailer space is an interesting space where you can ask more questions than you answer. And you let the movie do the heavy lifting when people come to see it. You know, just make it interesting, make it compelling, and don't put up weak story plot points, you know?
And you want the trailer to ask questions.
Yeah.
Because if it gives you all the answers, then why am I going to go to the movie? Right?
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, like, leave me guessing and wanting more. It's kind of like dating, you know? Like, you can't say everything on the first date. There's no reason for her to call you back. You know, you got to leave her guessing. All right, man, Bird Box. Let's get into Bird Box.
Bird Box. So what did you think about Bird Box?
Bird Box threw me a couple of times. So the beginning, and then they show, so they have the beginning, which was like a trailer to the trailer in a sense. Mm-hmm. Oh, and really quick, let me go back to the trailer of the first one we covered, which is I Am the Night.
Uh-huh.
No dialogue, and they show some scenes, and all it does is it has that, like, I don't know, that trailer to the trailer, like, build up to a climax music. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I remember.
Yeah, so then jumping now back over to Bird Box, and I like these two movies because they do have a good comparison, even though they're very different from each other. And Bird Box has a trailer to the trailer. But the cool thing about the trailer to the trailer that I think in this one is that when you see her then getting the ultrasound, it's right after she has that scene with the blindfolds.
Yeah.
First thing I thought was like a dream sequence. You know, oh, that was a dream sequence. Maybe she's like fearful to have her first child or something or whatever it might be. And now there she is having her ultrasound for her first child, right? That was my initial thinking. And as you go on watching, you realize it's like some weird kind of zombie virus, not really zombie virus thing.
Yes.
You know?
It's like the sum of all your fears in your eyeballs, you know? Yeah, so I agree with you on I Am the Night. I Am the Night is falls into the idea of the trailer to trailer. So I agree with that. And I agree that it's done very well. It has the characters set up without even any idea of no need for names, but it goes through methodically, systematically, and it hits you with the different characters and
yeah.
The suspense of what's going to happen. Bird Box, to me, it feels like it's not, I don't really consider that trailer to the trailer. I think of it more of like an opening scene of something. You know, there is definitely time shift, and I think that's what we've talked about that before, where it opens. Did you ever watch Lost? Did you start Lost?
You know, I saw there's a few times where I think of Lost in some of this stuff. You know, like, especially when we talk about like 22 episodes and you just have to fill time.
Ouch.
I couldn't get into Lost, man. I couldn't get into it.
Well, I loved Lost, and I think part of the reason that I love Lost is that it's kind of a clinic on the character study. So the opening scene is on Jack's eye, you know, it opens on Jack's eye, Jack's pupil dilating, and he's in the middle of the woods on the ground, you know, middle of the forest or the beach forest, you know, it's kind of strange. But you know that it's his story. You know that we're going to follow him through this whole thing. And we even when we deviate and we see other people and we go through other characters' stories, we know that we're eventually going to get back to Jack's story because of the way that the whole series opened and the way that it plays out. So when this trailer opens, and it opens on Sandra Bullock laying on the floor of the forest, you know, with a blindfold over her eyes, it's very similar. You know, we know it's her story. We know what it's selling. Even though we don't have any recollection of her association with these children, there's an immediate understanding of the situation that the children are somewhere close by. It looks like it's a similar forest, but you know, they're ringing their bell to try to get them back, get back together. And it's that there's a parental thing that kicks in, I think, maybe. There's definitely was for me, where I'm like, oh my God, I don't know why they have blindfolds on, but I know that if I had to have a blindfold on and my kids have their blindfolds on, like, I don't know how we'd get separated, but if we were separated, I'd sure as hell want to know a way to get back together. You know, like it was a very interesting play on it. And then, like you said, as you start to watch it over again, and as you see more and more press about something, that's when I started to see the comparisons to A Quiet Place.
Yeah.
And when they talk about A Quiet Place having this convention, this hook of like, oh, you can't make a sound, you know, our oldie but goodie, silent but deadly, right? It's like you have this hook that's just so evocative that it spins everyone's imagination in a direction that is very common. You know, everyone can imagine this space. So this does it with eyesight. So it's kind of like just a sensory swap out. You know what I mean? It's like, we're just do a quiet place with a dark place. You know what I mean?
Well, and what I want to know is, like, and I'm going to watch this because what I want to know is, how does this whole like seeing your fears thing work? Because one, if I see what I'm afraid of and you see what you're afraid of, and that's what our experiences are, we're going to have two very different experiences.
Right.
And then if you add in like the millions of people that might be within reach of you, everybody's having crazy experiences of what they're seeing, but no one's seeing the same thing. Yet in this, it seems everyone's kind of experiencing the same thing.
Well, no, I think your first assessment is correct. I think everybody sees exactly what they need to see. And I think the way Sarah Paulson plays this scene where she's seeing her fears driving the car,
yeah,
is amazing. And I think her acting in that one shot is completely evocative of a fear, a sum of all fears. You know, it's like she shows how scared and how fearful she is, regardless of what she's seeing. So I too am interested in how they play that out and how different characters and different actors show that fear. And I hope that we're in a space where Suzanne Beer, the director of this, never shows us the fear. Because, like you said, it's such a personal thing,
yeah,
that it should be left to the person's imagination.
Imagination, yeah.
And I think that could go one of two ways. It could go one way where it kind of becomes hokey if the actors can't pull off the portrayal. But that I was sold with Sarah Paulson's portrayal of fear. And John Malkovich, I believe he could pull it off. Sandra Bullock, I think she can pull it off. I think many of the actors that they've pulled into this can pull off this extremely difficult tightrope of a kind of portrayal where you have to look blankly off into space and imagine your deepest, darkest fear and then show it.
Okay, so with that said, my next comment is, or critique is, they're in a house or they're inside of a vehicle. The windows they have painted out, the house has the curtains drawn, and they don't want to see out because whatever's out there might come inside.
Right.
Fine, I get that. Why is it, though, that whatever they're afraid of isn't already inside, because why is it that you have to see outside for your fears to be realized when the room you're sitting in can certainly have your fears realized?
And I too was also taken aback. So I had that same critique of it, and it's a movie logic critique. It's not even a trailer critique. It's more of like,
it's a movie logic critique, correct?
In A Quiet Place, you know, it makes sense because sound travels over distance, you know? So
yeah,
sound travels through things, and they're trying to be quiet all the time. And when they stop being quiet, then the monsters get in, you know? With sight, it's a little different because it wasn't about them stuffing their ears. You know what I mean? It wasn't about them not hearing things. Our heroes and our victims could hear things fine, except for the little girl. But in this, the bad guys aren't the things that are seeing you. It's what you're seeing out. So that whole flip, it's not replacing sounds with sights. It's actually replacing and reversing the field of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We aren't concerned with the monster or the alien sight to us. We're concerned about our sight to them. And like you said, inside, what's the difference? You know, there's no difference between inside and being outside.
Absolutely.
And then you just extrapolate that even further, and you say, you close your eyes, your mind can still send images to your eyes can still send images to your brain with your eyes closed. You know, it's not a thing. You know, you can still imagine the same things that you saw.
And I guess the final critique I have, so then they get blindfolded and they leave out to the forest and they're in the boat and they're going down the waterfall and, you know, she has the gun and all this stuff. And I don't know where they're going. And maybe it's more the reason why I want to watch it. Like, well, where the heck are they going? And are they going to a place that they're no longer afraid? So once they get there, they can take off the blindfold and everything is like happy land? You know, like, in other words, it doesn't matter where they go if the premise is that there's, let's just say, a virus. If the premise is that there's this like fear virus, that whatever you see is what's going to happen to you, then if you're carrying this virus and it's already happening to you, you're not going to escape it by traveling somewhere different.
Right. And I think that was a good thing about The Walking Dead was they were, you know, spoiler, they already have it, right?
Yeah, they all have it.
They all have it. And it's just a question of like degree. And this too, it's like, I'm interested to see it because it's definitely an allegory for something else. I understand that. And I want to see how well it's played out. And I want to see how well it's portrayed throughout this feature.
Yeah. I mean, I think the main thing is, and I think what attracts me most to want to see this is all that we're talking about. And like, I don't know, I don't know if you'd call them the writing, the holes in writing.
I like story logic. I like talking about story logic.
Yeah, story logic and things. But I think that somewhere in there, they're going to write their way out of the things we're talking about. And I want to see, because I don't think the trailer does a good job in giving you the story logic, but something tells me that the movie's going to tie it up in a nicer bow than what we're seeing in the trailer.
Right. And that is the hope for sure. And I think the people that they put together to make this are definitely in the vein of people who could pull it off. But did you ever see The Happening? Another lesser known M. Night Shyamalan, I believe.
No, I don't think I've ever heard of The Happening.
Happening, Mark Wahlberg. People start going crazy and start killing each other, I think. And there's a group of people, and I forget how it happens exactly, but these people are trying to migrate through space to get to safety. You know, there's some kind of safety in numbers thing. And it's another thing where a virus has attacked a human population and made it ultra violent. So it's just a question of not necessarily zombies per se, but it is that same space of virus or, you know, unknown psychological stressors.
Well, and, you know, sometimes you'd think, you know, maybe the virus already hit with some of the violence you see going on in the world. I don't know. I mean, I'm definitely going to watch it. I think the barrier's low. It's on Netflix. It's going to come to you.
Mm-hmm.
Sandra Bullock and a bunch of other great actors in there and stuff. And I love like, and I think you've mentioned this in the past, I love the inside of vehicles in a car crash.
Yeah. It's amazing, right?
When they show the hair going all left, right, and up, you know, as they're flipping and stuff. And I mean, it's just so cool, you know, like, I don't ever want to experience it firsthand, but it's cool to watch when, well, it's the same thing, I think, when you have a Steadicam.
Uh-huh.
In the back, on the back deck of a car when they're driving and you see the heads bouncing with the road, right?
Yeah.
You know, like you see that in Quentin Tarantino movies and...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think it's that, it's like to a, that's much to a lesser degree than a car accident. But, but yeah, when you see like the car and everything happening, but the camera is still, you know?
Yeah.
It makes for a very interesting... a viewpoint for a car crash.
It's almost like an out-of-body experience, right?
A little bit. Maybe that's why it's so interesting. But no, you know, I think, though, I might watch this when it's one of those cold, wintry nights and the wind's howling and it's like just pouring and, you know, and then it's like, you know what, Clarissa, tonight is the night that we're going to get under the covers and we're going to freak ourselves out. You know? I think it's well saved for that.
Awesome.
How about you?
I agree. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get Anne to watch it, but I'll definitely watch it first by myself. And if it's what I think it is, I think I can coax her into watching it with Sandra Bullock as the linchpin there.
So Anne, you guys, or let me back up. So Anne might not watch this, you're saying?
Yeah, she doesn't do horror or anything close to it.
Oh, interesting. You know, and Clarissa's not in that space either. And we've talked about it too. I mean, we're really not. But you know what's funny though about me and Clarissa is if there's a show we want to watch or a movie or anything, like, I don't know how we got there, but like, we don't watch anything or experience anything like that without the other one because then what ultimately happens is it's like, wow, this is so good. You need to watch this too. And then like me or her, whichever, just winds up watching it again. And it's like, oh man, I didn't need to watch this twice, you know? And so, yeah, it's like, sometimes it's almost like, what is that? Paralysis by analysis, you know, like we analyze them so much that like, we just don't watch anything, you know?
Right. Yeah, or you can't agree, right?
Yeah, that's what I mean. There's so much to watch that we just go to bed and read.
Do you read the same book? You don't read the same book.
And both of our fingers follow the line. No, we don't read the same book. We read very different. She's into like fiction and fantasy and, you know, magic and knights and swords and, you know, whatever it is, right? Sci-fi and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And like, you know, I mean, to put it a way, I don't know how to word it, but like, I can read manuals, you know, like, yeah, I mean, like, here's how to do whatever it is, you know, and here's how to build a better city. Here's how to build, like, you know, or whatever, you know, like, here's how to podcast. I can read it all night long. Personal finance. I can read personal finance.
You know what book I just read? I just read Rebel Talent.
Rebel Talent. Is that, yes, about is that a Star Wars?
It sounds kind of like Star Wars. No.
Yeah.
It's about being a rebel in the current business environment.
Oh, gotcha.
And how rebels are really good for your business.
Yeah, I could see that.
So I'm trying to sell that to the higher ups. Rebels are good.
Hey, I'm a maverick. I'm thinking Rebel Talent like you're the Mos Eisley Cantina Band or something. You know? Like that's Rebel Talent, you know?
That is a type of Rebel Talent, that's for sure.
Yeah.
It's actually our book club book for this quarter. So I tweeted at the author and she's gonna speak to our book club, I guess, today, the day this comes out.
Whoa, very cool. You know, and I didn't read the book, but... Well, maybe not obvious, but anyway, I didn't read the book. But, you know, I always try and like come across with that kind of stuff at work. And I'll tell you, in the world of education, bureaucracy is so thick that no one wants a rebel. It's just like, tote the line. The union says this. And it's just like, whatever, I'll just go along. Nothing changes, you know, and... Yeah, a lot of people have...
But nothing changes means nothing gets better, right?
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. A lot of people have awesome ideas, you know, and we've talked about it before, like Ken Robinson and stuff. And, you know, we've talked about a lot of people doing a lot of awesome things, but when the rubber meets the road, nobody wants to change, you know?
Yeah.
So I think there's too many in whether it's education or business and whatever. I think the people who have the power are the ones making the money, and they don't want to be unseated. You know, and but that's a whole other political thing we're talking into. So let's stick to movie trailers.
All right.
Yeah.
So
cool. Yeah. I mean, I think we had had three cool ones. I don't know if the story logic follows, you know, the kid who would be king in Bird Box, but I guess we'll have to wait and find out. I Am the Night looks cool because, you know, a LA based gynecologist in the early 60s who was involved in debauchery. I mean, yeah.
It's a little LA Confidential, right? It's like,
or what was that one movie with the murders in LA that were never solved? There was, it was like a book into a movie.
Black Dahlia?
Yeah, Black Dahlia.
I think that's what this is based on.
Oh, you think this is Black Dahlia?
I think this is another telling of Black Dahlia.
Oh.
Like a different angle on it.
Yeah. Wow, I didn't even go there with it. I mean, it reminded me.
But I think that's really early, right? That's much, much older than what I Am the Night looks like.
Maybe, I don't know. But like, I didn't really think, I thought Black Dahlia in the sense of nothing more than a murder in LA or something. But, and I'm not even saying this is murder. But when you look at like what the underlying theme or story of I Am the Night.
Yep, that is Black Dahlia. Yep, I just checked it out, and it is the infamous Hollywood gynecologist who was involved in the legendary Black Dahlia slaying of Elizabeth Short.
Oh, okay. So, and this is Fauna Hodel. Fauna? Is that how you pronounce that? Fauna? Fauna? I don't know. F-A-U-N-A?
Fauna, I guess, right?
Fauna. Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. Whatever. I'm not going to butcher it any worse than I already did. Yeah. So, I mean, something like that, I think, is like going to tell the story it's going to tell. I don't think you're going to run into a lot of story logic issues. You know, the kid who would be king, well, like I said, with the eclipse, you certainly can. And then the Bird Box, or well, I should say Bird Box. There is no article in front of it. But, you know, there were a number of things that we talked about that might interfere. But the one thing I want to watch it for is like, write yourself out of those things, you know?
Explain the movie logic to me and satisfy my...
Totally. 100%. Yeah.
My curiosity of how you solve this.
And if I walk away without those things answered, I'm going to tear it apart. I don't like it. But if you answer it well and it, or make it believable, yeah, okay, sure. I'm all in, you know?
No, it's an interesting puzzle to solve. Let's see. Let's see if Suzanne can pull it off.
Totally. All right, Ted, it's Sunday night. We got to go to work tomorrow, man. What do you say we get out of here?
Awesome. Have a great week.
Yeah, and finally, just really quick, I finished up that beer, and it didn't last very long. It was so smooth. It went down really easy. I think I was done 10 minutes, maybe 15, into the recording.
Well, my protein shake was also very good, and I like to finish them quickly so it doesn't warm up because that's horrible.
Oh, and they're not like chocolate or something?
They're chocolate, but it's pea protein, so it's plant-based, which adds a little tinge to it. The whey protein is much better, much smoother.
We do the whey protein.
Whey protein's much smoother. You know, it's all the animal fats, so it's animal proteins are much, much nicer than the plant proteins as far as taste goes.
Yeah, I got you. All right, that's Ted's take on protein, so.
All right, have a good night.
Hey, really quick though, man, good luck in your last week.
I know, pushing hard.
Want you to lose that weight, man, get your $500. You take that $500, we're going out.
All you can eat.
There you go, man, that's it, party. All right, hey, you have a good work week.
All right, talk to you later.
All right, bye, man.
All right, bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the holy trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.